The World Tomorrow. Garner Ted Armstrong brings you the plain truth about today's world news and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
And greetings, friends around the world. 1975, the year that was, and how the world has changed in such a short period of time. Since 1973, the world has completely changed, almost backward and upside down from what it was then. With the bulk of the wealth of the world moved into some of the oil-rich Persian Gulf sheikdoms, with the energy crisis, the ecology and environmental crises, detente, so many governments toppling, old leaders and statesmen dying and disappearing, terrorism, bloodshed, bombings, kidnappings on the rise around the world. When you look, though, at the last of the few years of the recent past, 1975, and try to get a handle on where we are going in 1976 and 7, where we're going toward the turn of the new century as America celebrates its bicentennial year, and as we look on over into the 2000s and wonder seriously about human survival. Well, the overview of 1975, in retrospect, is not necessarily encouraging. It was violence, civil war, and economic gloom that mostly dominated the news through the entirety of that year. It was the year in which Indochina went the way of the domino theory. Those theorists of the early Eisenhower administration who reasoned that the policy of containment was, in fact, the best way to go to contain communism, and saw, according to the domino theory, that one tiny government after another would be swallowed up if the United States did not remain firm in Southeast Asia. Well, I suppose, in retrospect, you could say that theory has been proved, because 1975 was the year in which the entirety of a map of Indochina turned red. It ended 30 years of war that raged in one country after another of the Indochinese Peninsula for control of Laos, Cambodia, and Vietnam. That, as a matter of fact, had become the oldest open conflict resulting from outside foreign power intervention in the internal affairs of other governments, and the various ideological differences that brought about first self-immolations, riots, disturbances, near civil war, and finally outside interference on the part of the communists in the United States, which led toward the longest, most expensive, and agonizing war that virtually ripped apart the heart and the soul of the United States of America and resulted in one of the most ignominious defeats in our nation's history. It came to an end in 1975 when Saigon fell to North Vietnam. And it happened so rapidly after all those years, all those lives, all those dollars. The communist large-scale offensive in the early spring, and in less than 1 month, they had extended their control to two-thirds of the country, following the Nixon administration policy of what was called Vietnamization, the withdrawal of American troops, negotiation for the recovery of American POWs, the final total withdrawal of American forces, with the exception of a handful of observers, and this, of course, then torn back and forth in the press, who, in the wake of Watergate, wanted to be assured the federal government was not lying about American involvement in Vietnam, but truly had Vietnamized the war. Well, they had, and the facts now, in retrospect, prove that they had, because it was all too easy a plum for the communists to pluck in the aftermath of American withdrawal. So from their spring offensive, in less than a month, they extended their control to two-thirds of the country in the mid-teens of refugee panic and suffering, and of course, terror-stricken people fleeing American-held buildings aboard helicopters in the horrible agony of seeing those people, as you so well remember now, tumbling into the dock or being crushed between the ship and the dock or drowning en route, struggling to get aboard the departing vessels. And then the trauma, still in the news, of the transplanted Vietnamese refugees at American military bases, trying to be assimilated into American life, and it's been a very difficult road for a lot of them. So the year of 1975, in retrospect, still has a lot of open wounds around when you look at what happened in Southeast Asia, Indochina, and particularly in Vietnam. We had to look, and so did the rest of the world, as domino-like. The communist Khmer Rouge tightened its grip on the Cambodian capital. Shortly thereafter, you may remember, came that Mai Weiz incident. Civil wars have erupted around the world in 1975, places little known, East Timor, for example, Angola, now much in the news, and yet just before that time, most Americans couldn't have told you where it was, Lebanon, where guerrillas, gangsters, ultra-extremists at the right and the left and everywhere in between, have shot and cudgeled, stabbed, bombed, and blasted their way into the headlines in shock as we look at the bloodletting in country after country, the ambush the other day in Northern Ireland. Hundreds of British troops and armored cars rushed to the scene of another bloody massacre. The plain truth was keeping not only up with all of these events in 1975, but giving you the overview on out into the future of the world with our issue of December 22nd, 1975, highlighting the worldwide terrorist epidemic. And then our week ending December 6th of 1975 of the passing of Europe's old guard, the death and the passing from the scene of some of the great leaders of the world of the post-World War II era. And now, the current number and the ones coming up, does America really stand for anything? Which you can have, by the way, your free subscription to this in-depth overview world news magazine in the light of Bible prophecy, fully illustrated with our regional editors abroad and around the world giving you the insight from behind the scenes on the spot, and it's absolutely free of charge, and you can have the plain truth with these articles looking at the world not only in retrospect but in the future of the world with our new feature on human survival. The biggest issue before humankind today, will mankind survive? The current circulation of the last issue of the plain truth was 3,677,323. You'll make it 3,677,324. You need to keep abreast of world conditions because, believe it or not, we now enter the era of the fulfillment, the beginning of the end, of the fulfillment of much, if not all, of the remainder of biblical prophecy. You are living, like it or not, want to accept it or believe it or not, in the biblically prophesied time of the end, in the 11th chapter of the book of Daniel. And in the imminent fulfillment of so many of the things Jesus said in Matthew 24, of wars, rumors of wars, of government or kingdom against kingdom, of drought and famine, of natural cataclysm and upsets in the weather, in the food versus population curve of the world, and especially in the political arena of one gigantic problem after another in country after country around the world. It's been a terrible, uncertain year for the leaders of the world's great nations, as well as the third world countries, and government everywhere has been under attack. Mr. Ford has seen his own personal standing among American voters take a terrible, disappointing surge downward, and of course, it's difficult to know who is running for president these days. It seems so many are standing in the wings waiting for the opportunity of the call of their own party. 1975 was a year that had a number of reports coming out of China and the Soviet Union, the illness of the near death of some of the leaders of the great communist bloc countries. With it, the rumor, unconfirmed, that Mr. Brezhnev was suffering from a serious but undisclosed illness. In China, there had been some rare appearances made to give the lie to the rumor that Mao was dead, but at least he did receive some visiting foreign dignitaries. And earlier in 1975, Zhou Enlai, the premier, had started the year in apparent ascendancy over Mao Zedong, had been confined to the hospital and was unable to see foreign visitors who arrived there. It was a year, too, of the assassination of many world leaders. Among them, the heads of state of the Malagasy Republic, the king of Saudi Arabia, the nation of Chad in Africa, the nation of Bangladesh over there next to India. Others were overthrown through various coups in Nigeria, Peru, and the last dictator of Western Europe, General Francisco Franco, died. And by now, I've remembered the programs we did on that, and we even heard the voices of those who were engaged in the funeral procession and the coronation ceremonies, which we had heard from on the spot over there in Spain when it occurred here on the World Tomorrow program. Franco dead after 38 years in office and a new king in the nation of Spain. And I talked then about biblical prophecy, talking about a series of kings and the number of people waiting to occupy a throne in some of the countries in Europe. And we went over the number of countries in Europe and Scandinavia presently ruled, at least in name, if not in actual fact, by a monarch. And we have to remember, too, that within a month of the installation of the new king in Spain, that another monarchy had disappeared, where the king of Laos had yielded to left-wing forces and abdicated his throne. In 1975, the century's longest reigning monarch, Emperor Haile Selassie of Ethiopia, already deposed and seemingly thinking he was ruling his empire from house arrest, unaware at the last exactly How much of his power had eroded? Died after a year which saw his country's new ruler struggling to contain a rebellion in the province of Eritrea. Other major figures of world prominence, especially coming to popularity in, during, and after World War II, such as Generalissimo Chiang Kai-shek of Nationalist China, had died. Also, Eamon de Valera, who was a former president of Ireland, he died from natural causes of old age. But it was a time when the plain truth kept abreast of all these happenings in the light of development in Europe, the Middle East, and elsewhere, in the light of Bible prophecy, because of the passing of old guard leaders of the post-World War II era and the emergence of new leaders in countries all around the world. It was a year of civil wars and conflicts flaring everywhere around the world, in Africa particularly. We now, every day in the news, are reading of Angola, of the battle of words as well as swords and guns going on daily in Angola because of outside intervention on the part of the Soviet Union with Cuban troops, apparently the presence of South African troops, and at least American overt support, which is now being much maligned in the press. And so we see, after rapid withdrawal by Portugal from one of the last colonies in Africa, the last African possession of Portugal, a civil war between three rival groups all battling for control, with young boys being given guns, marching with a big grin on their face to kill somebody else, not even necessarily knowing what the issues are, who they're fighting against, or why, but just that they want control. Communist troops from Cuba and Soviet arms and advisors intervening on the side of the left-wing popular movement, while money from the United States, sponsored, of course, by various governmental agencies, and one most suspect these days, which is rather ridiculous when you look at the funeral of Mr. Welch, the CIA, and so, of course, the ultra, whatever you want to call it, soul-searching, the hypocrisy of those who stand knee-deep in garbage and shoot rockets at the moon, or stand knee-deep in their own personal sins while they point a finger at government, who seem to delight in ripping the cloak from any covert governmental operation which may have to do with the security of the United States and the protection of a free society in a world filled with tigers. So we go about the business of trying to draw back the screen or the cloak from undercover agents of the American government in countries abroad. Until now, many of them completely exposed in fear of their lives, unable to function. And so the entire process, which we cannot deny to other countries, and which is used to an extreme beyond belief by the Soviet Union, in covert operations infiltrating into the highest echelons of government around the world, into the press, entertainment, into various echelons of government, state, local, and federal, where the communists are busy as they can possibly be going about their business completely unexposed, because they don't seem to have the notion that they owe it to their people to tell the entirety of the communist people in Pravda or Izvestia exactly who are the communist agents abroad. But somebody in the American journalistic society feels that it's our duty to expose who are the American agents abroad. So they're met with machine gun fire when they come home from some social activity. Well, perhaps other people can argue the rationale for all of this reasoning, but I think perhaps it ought to be argued. When you take a look at the whole world then, in retrospect, in 1975, you look at the Middle East, at what is happening there with Egyptian President Anwar Sadat enraging many of his Arab allies by making an agreement under which Egypt gave political assurances in return for Israeli troop withdrawals in Sinai. But yet, one of the bloodiest chapters of all the Middle East, erupting in what used to be one of the most stable nations in the Middle East, the banking and commercial capital of the Middle East, Lebanon, in fighting which has gone on and on between extremists at both ends of the pole over there that have left at least 5,000 people dead by the end of the year, and violence engulfing just about the whole of the country. Well, it's been a year of renewed terrorism, the toppling of governments, the emerging of new ones, a year that underlines the fulfillment a biblical prophecy. For years on this program, we have said, watch Europe and watch the Middle East, because biblical prophecy points up there is going to come a union of countries which will form itself into a world superpower to vie with superpower status with the Soviet Union and the United States, which will be like a third power block sitting aside the fulcrum of the balance of power between the East and the West, able to arbitrate between the two, which will finally measure up to what it believes is its full stature politically and militarily which it already enjoys industrially and economically. West Germany, for example, which would be no doubt the dominant power or one of them of any such organization of states in Europe, which might be called the United States of Europe, West Germany characterized as a political dwarf, but an economic giant. The days when they are about to become a political and a military giant are not far in the future. And every single week and month sees additional significant steps toward the development of coming unity in Europe. I interviewed at the time of the NATO summit conference in Belgium, Prime Minister Leo Tindemans. I was there when he assembled heads of state, including President Ford and Prime Minister Henry Kissinger, were all in the same room at the NATO summit conference in the spring of 1975. And I heard the words then of the American leadership in an attempt to shore up flagging European confidence in the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. And I commented from on the spot, as well as the program that is at the Paris Air Show, the biggest arms deal of the century in 1975, about a coming United States of Europe. I'd like to take you now to Brussels, Belgium, and a few minutes commentary on the upcoming moves toward further European unity and some points Mr. Tindemans, the Prime Minister of Belgium, made from our correspondent on the spot in Brussels, the capital of NATO headquarters, at least, the seat of NATO headquarters in Europe. His name is Ray Kosanke.
The crisis in Europe is so serious that we must, in the immediate future, save what has already been achieved and, working on this basis, take drastic measures to make a significant leap forward. These are the words of Belgian Prime Minister Leo Tindemans in his report on European Union released to the press today. Prime Minister Tindemans had been asked 1 year ago at the Paris Summit Conference to draw up his report on European Union after spending 1975 in consultation with major institutions, governments, and European leaders throughout the community. As Mr. Tindemans says in his report, quote, "During my visits, I was struck by the widespread feeling that we are vulnerable and powerless. This is a new experience for our people in recent history. Inequality in the distribution of wealth threatens the stability of the world economic system. Exhaustion of resources weighs heavily on the future of industrial society. The internationalization of economic life makes our system of production ever more dependent. Our states seem very weak to face these challenges alone. What weight do isolated voices have unless they are those of the superpowers? Our people expect the European Union to be, where and when appropriate, the voice of Europe. Our joint action must be the means of effectively defending our legitimate interests. It must provide the basis for real security in a fairer world and enable us to take part in this dialogue between groups, which is apparently a new aspect of international life. How can we reconcile these requirements in today's world if we do not unite? Europe," he added, "must recover a certain amount of control over its destiny. It must build a type of society which is ours alone and which reflects the values which are the heritage and the common creation of our peoples." Mr. Tindemans went on, "Our peoples expect the European Union to embody and promote the development of our society in the way foreseen above, to provide a new authority to compensate for the reduced power of national structures and to introduce reforms and controls which often cannot be implemented at state level. To give an organic form to the existing solidarity of our economies, our finances, and our social life." Admitting that there is a price to pay in uniting Europe, Mr. Tindemans went on to say, "But what price would we pay for inaction? The crumbling away of the community, voices isolated and often going unheard in the theater of the world, increasingly less control over our destiny, and unconvincing Europe without a future. Our state's reasons," he said, "for presenting a united front in world discussions stem from power relationships and the size of the problem. Our vulnerability and our relative impotence are in the thoughts of everyone. The convergence of these two factors means that external relations are one of the main reasons for building Europe and make it essential for the European Union to have an external policy." Prime Minister Tindemans went on to say, "For 30 years, the relative weight and influence of our states in the world has been continually reduced. In step with this, the national government's hold over the means that make it possible to influence the future of our societies has constantly diminished. Both internally and externally, the room for maneuver of the individual states has decreased. They attempt to maintain their balance in the face of pressures and factors, internal as well as external, which are outside their control. The danger of the effects of this twofold spiral of powerlessness is great. It leads from weakness to dependence, which itself is a source of further losses. The construction of Europe is the only all-inclusive answer to this challenge. It derives spontaneously from the will of our peoples and is embodied in the work of the founding fathers of Europe. It is the only answer which seeks everywhere to regain some of the control and power which is slipping from us, and to enable us to build a society in which we want to live. Mr. Tindemans concluded by saying, at a time when unemployment and inflation are rampant in all of our countries, where everyone questions the causes of the weaknesses of our economic and political structures, and when the prosperity of Europe depends on factors outside our control, the European effort must leave no one indifferent. Each of us must participate in the common effort that we may together shape a more just society in which our common values are observed, so that we can make our voice heard in the world with the power of our union behind it. On that, in the end, he said, will depend our way of life and that of our children. This report by Belgian Prime Minister Leo Tindemans calls for harmonization of existing policies on a wide scale, from creation of an arms agency and a common energy policy to regional and social harmonization. His report will be used in the coming months and years as a basic building block around Europe in the quest for full European Union. Rachel Sankey at European Community Headquarters, Brussels.
Very historical words by the Prime Minister of Belgium. The Prime Minister of Belgium, who had been very much criticized in the press at the time of my arrival in Belgium in the spring of 1975, simply because of his extensive travels into other European capitals, where he was listening to the voice of various of the local state governments, meaning national governments of the European countries, because he was playing a significant role in the European Parliament and was actually the secretary of the committee which was set up to formulate or to bring about European Union. Mr. Tindemans has then played more of the supranational role, even at the expense of his own political fortunes inside the country of Belgium, because he is such a tremendous advocate of a European Union, as you heard in these words from Ray Kosanke on the spot. He talked of the vulnerability and the powerlessness of the present European state, and he meant simply what he said about energy and the dependent system of Europe, which is at the mercy of the Arab oil-rich state, as we saw in the earlier go-around of the energy crisis about a year and a half ago, simply because Europe is now already up to 100% dependent upon North African and Middle Eastern oil, where the United States, even though earlier they had said 11, then finally adjusted it to 17%, then it went to about 24 or more percent. Now it is somewhere over 40% dependent, in spite of the fact we could have gotten into the pride of living on less energy in the dark days of the immediacy of the energy crisis. No, we have gone back to become ever more dependent upon Arab oil, so we're edging upwards in our dependency rather than becoming self-sufficient in energy. But Europe is in far worse shape than is the United States when it comes to energy. They had said constantly that Europe must find some common energy policy, not only in the development of alternative energy sources, especially that of nuclear reactors, which already festoon many a country inside Europe, and do have the potential, as you so well know, in the nuclear age of the byproduct of plutonium, which can be made into nuclear bombs and weapons, but also a nuclear policy which would allow, and an energy policy which would allow, the European nations to unilaterally, at least with one voice, as if one power block of Europe, to deal with the Arab countries irrespective of any problems between the United States of America and Arab countries when it comes to energy. They would like to have the control over their own destiny in their own hands, as Mr. Tindemans said, and not in the hands of others. He said several times in that speech, if you heard it, that Europe must control its own destiny, that it must find a way to provide a new authority, a central authority, a European authority, a common authority above that of the diminishing national individual European roles. And he talked about their vulnerability and their relative impotence on the world scene. Europe is tired, you see, of looking back and forth like spectators at a tennis game, watching the ball being returned back and forth across the net, with themselves looking from east to west between the Soviet Union and the United States as the superpowers vie for position, for power, to make détente work, to cause the Soviet Union to get out of Angola, or the Soviet Union to rebuff American challenges in that regard, and to say that the United States is also involved. Europe is tired of looking back and forth at the superpowers vying for position and having no real significant voice in their own destiny. That was a very historic speech by the Belgian Prime Minister, talking of unemployment and the weak economies and how all must participate in the common effort to make their voice heard in the world. This program, for more than four solid decades, has been talking of an impending third power bloc, a United States of Europe. The facts are that even during the very darkest days of World War II, and immediately upon the turnback of the Rommel African Corps in North Africa, my father, Mr. Herbert W. Armstrong, the broadcast of that time, began to talk about how Germany must rise again. During the very time when the fortunes of war turned against the Nazi power, and it appeared that the Axis would not link up in the Middle East, that the forces of Japan, of Italy, and of Germany would not succeed in cutting through to the Suez Canal and taking over the entirety of the present nation of Israel, then called Palestine, he began at that moment to say, well then, this is only round two in World War, and there has to come yet another one. The fulfillment of the Battle of Armageddon, of Matthew 24, of the seals, of the sixth chapter of the book of Revelation, is not right now imminent. He said it's for some time in the future, and Germany must rise again. Well, that has happened. But the point is, it was being said right while Germany was being pounded to rubble at the end of World War II. If you want the true overview of what is happening inside Europe right now today, the Middle East, all the rest of the world for that matter, in retrospect in what has happened in the last year and also in the future overview in the light of Bible prophecy, then you need your name on the mailing list of the unique magazine, The Plain Truth. The current number, Does America Still Stand for Anything? The new feature on human survival, and the article, Will Russia Rule the Wave? While you're at it, request this booklet, which is the very key to biblical prophecy, called The United States and British Commonwealth in Prophecy. Now remember, the literature I've announced on this program is absolutely free of charge. It costs you nothing. So if you write for The Plain Truth, it's absolutely free of charge. There is no price. Find out whether or not it's really what it says it is. The Plain Truth. There's no request for money. There's no follow-up. No one's going to call on you unless you, of course, request it first. So be sure to request The Plain Truth, and remember, it's absolutely free. There is no charge. We'll get it in the mail to you as quickly as we receive your letter. There's never any bill to follow. We would like to know the call letters of the station to which you're listening, the name of this radio station, and then we'll get your Plain Truth in the mail as quickly as we can. You send your letter to Garner Ted Armstrong, Box 345, Sydney, New South Wales. Until next time, this is Garner Ted Armstrong saying goodbye, friends.
You have heard The World Tomorrow with Garner Ted Armstrong, brought to you by the Worldwide Church of God. For literature offered on this program, send your request along with the call letters of this station to Garner Ted Armstrong, Post Office Box 345, Sydney, New South Wales.